There's a little delay. There it goes.
Please hang up and try again.
Yourself a cold one, pull up a chair. It's radio time. It's Thursday. You're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm Chip Gibson, the tree hugger. And wow, we've got some interesting stuff. We've got the man, the voice, the incredible. I think we'll do it's not really a Cavassier night. There it is, Mr. Becker. Sitting in
the
hall.
I guess it's definitely a hopping thing to do. So I got my culottes on, you know. Just jam it.
Awesome. Okay. Oh, wait. I hit the wrong button there. Doggone it.
Anything worth doing is worth overdoing.
It's worth overdoing. That's right. That's right. And then and our newest member and representative at ICAST for Kayak Fishing Radio is, I got to find some music there for you, Sean. Maybe some Navy stuff or something like that. I'm not sure. I could play She Only Loves Me When She's Drinking, but that's kind of Woody's song there. So,
YMCA's in the Navy would be a good option, I think.
We could do
in the Navy. There you go.
There we go. All right.
Evening, everyone. Evening.
There's Sean Wagoner. And, Sean, you've made it back home. And, Greg, you're still over there in Orlando, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Made it home about 40 minutes ago.
Wow. Okay. And then I think we have Mr. Trucks joining us in. Is that you?
Yes, Matt? Sir, Chip. Good evening.
All right. We'll do a little whip back there for Matt. How's it going, buddy?
All right. I just got some change in my oil. I'm not a mechanic. I know something's wrong when two quarts come out and six go in.
You have to put the plug in before you fill it up, man.
Oh, that.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, when you first emptied it out, only two came out. Yeah, well, you have to check that every now and then. Yeah.
That's never happened
kind of
before. Weird.
Yeah. How old is
I
the
I figured
car?
It out when I took the oil filter off. There was an extra gasket there. I was like,
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll take care of it there, man. Well, anyway, so,
yeah.
Matt, we've got Greg and Sean. Greg is still over. ICAST finishes up tomorrow, right, or is today the last day?
3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon is when it's officially done.
Okay, so Greg is still there. Sean has returned, and we've got some live audio, we've got some audio that we'll be listening to next week. But tonight I just kind of wanted to get Greg and Sean to talk about the event and what it's like. I mean, I think both of you, it's your first time, right? Greg, your first time to ICAST?
Long time listener, first time caller, that's right.
Yeah, and Sean is first time down representing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the key thing that, Sean, you brought up about ICAST. Go ahead and, Sean, jump in there and talk about what you saw your first time at ICAST.
And I can sum up ICAST in two words: amazing and overwhelming.
Uh-huh.
The Orange County Convention Center just jam-packed, you know, probably a couple hundred yards of just exhibits, booths, vendors, I mean, from all over the industry, whether it's apparel, rods, reels, you know, the kayak vendors, tackle folks, gear, you name it, they're all in there.
Kind of looks like your garage, right? I mean, Or at least what all of us would like our garages to look like.
What we'd like it to look like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on a sec. Hey, Matt, Matt, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah, you got a lot of background noise, man. I had to mute you, sorry. But you're live now, oh. So you can handle your own mute button if it gets loud.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Sean, go
right
back.
Now, right?
Sean or Greg, what's your – you got two words or you want to do the six-word thing, man?
I can do two words. Freaking ginormous are my two words.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that the outdoor retailer might be a lot bigger physically, but – you know, Sean's words were right on the money. There is just so much there. Admittedly, for the past 2 days, I've been busy. But I did start at the 100 aisle, and today, finally, just made my way to the 2700 aisle, made it all the way through those, looking at the exhibits. And I've still got, you know, it goes up into the 3,000. So I've still got aisles I want to check out tomorrow. And that doesn't count a lot of going back and talking to people and stuff like that. But it's amazing how many different manufacturers there are of the same stuff in different aspects of angling. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, definitely companies never even heard of gear. I mean, just, you know, especially when it comes to some of the tackle, you walk by and it's like, wow, how many soft plastic guys are out there? How many people make crankbaits? I mean, how many variations on a crankbait can you make? It is pretty amazing.
Okay, so the first myth that we bust is that it's not all made in the same factory and they just put different labels on it when it comes out to your local tackle shop.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yep.
And okay, so let you guys continue on here, but what was kind of the strangest thing you saw at the fishing thing? I mean, I was at a electrical engineering conference. Actually, Southern Legislative Conference a couple of years back, and I don't know how they got it, but they must have paid top dollar for it, but right on the 100 hall, right at the entrance, was the American Nudist Association booth, and that was just kind of like, wow, right here at Southern Legislative Conference. But give us – so, Greg, go first, man. What's the weirdest thing you saw out there on the fishing market?
And I just have to say, I think that booth would have been a lot stranger if it was in Minnesota, you know. So it would have been a whole different
conversation,
so to speak. I don't know about strangest. I think probably the most unexpected thing I saw, you know, I saw a combination wading staff and net, which I, you know, I can kind of see for fly fishermen. I saw a couple other things. The rocket rod guys were there, which was okay. One thing I did not see until late this afternoon was a booth that had a banner that I think it was Catch It, Club It, Clean It. Catch It, Club It, Clean It, and the product they were selling was a combination fishing billy and fillet knife. The sheath for the fillet knife was actually a fishing billy. To whack fish on the head with. And while you got them there, you might as well clean them. It's a combination, you know, it's probably like the first person that did, you know, you got your peanut butter and my chocolate thing. Combination that probably wasn't really obvious to the casual observer, but I guess may have some application.
I wish they had a patch.
Indeed.
How about you, Sean? Man, what was your most unexpected or unusual sighting at ICAST this year?
Wow, I don't know that I was fully prepared for that question. But
sorry, man, I had to throw curveballs.
That's it, man. It was a curveball. I guess not really unexpected if you think about it, but the one thing I guess I really wasn't. So I guess to kind of back up, I mean, ICAST is not, you know, an open-to-the-public show, right? It is a trade show, open to the trade, open to people in the industry, right? So it's vendors, everybody coming out, media is there, buyers are there, right? So whether it's big box stores, small, you know, local stores, they're coming out to buy. And the show is there to cater to them. But I guess the one thing, it makes sense, but it wasn't kind of expected for me anyway, was there was a lot of booths, and you can tell it's like simple, plain white sign, Chinese name, kind of Americanized, that are making products that they're trying to sell to the vendors in there. So they weren't selling to the retailer per se, but you can tell they were more focused on how do I sell my swivel, my gidget for your lure, you know, or you know, hey, let us make your product. You know, look,
right.
we can look, here's an exact copy of your crankbait that we can do for you, you know. So they were there, and I thought some of that was a little little blatant. You walk by some of the booths, and you look at the stuff, and you're like, didn't I just see that over there on this other booth? And, you know, it's a much bigger name, and, yeah. So I think that was probably the most kind of surprising to me, but not really surprising, I guess.
Well, you know, it is business. It is economics, and if you can get it made for pennies on the dollar, it does give you more markup. But so interesting. So nothing really too bizarre, but and for those folks that might be listening on the podcast, or we've got a guest in the chat room, you can log in with any kind of social media there. But what about as far as the fishing, and you know, is it all sport fishing, but what did you think as far as your the degree of kayak fishing versus offshore versus freshwater? I mean, was there dividing lines there? I mean, could you see that? Or
so for me, obviously we had quite a few of the big kayak manufacturers here, right? So all the big ones, save Jackson, were all there on display. That was expected, you know, showing off the new kayaks, the new stuff. The rod reel tackle guys, I even tried talking with several of the rod and reel folks, you know, particularly the rod guys, to see if they would start, you know, if they were interested in producing a rod for the kayak community, you know, something that's still a 6'6", 7-foot rod, a little bit shorter, but, you know, still balanced well. You know, we don't need 16 inches of, you know, handle on the backside of a rod for the kayak. You know, and a couple of them just not really interested. They didn't know how to quantify their market for the kayaking side. A couple of others have said, we're beginning to recognize it, but we're just not at a point where we can meet the production numbers to justify making a run, but if the numbers are there, we're certainly happy to, you know, produce a rod just for you guys. So it was hard from a rod, reel, tackle perspective to see that there was some line that said, yeah, this is for kayak anglers. Now, the gear guys, the folks who are making gears, accessories, you know, tackle management, fishing accessories, quite a few of them were beginning to perk up and make stuff that, you know, was just for kayak anglers, or they're beginning to identify, you know, our community as a new market for them. Even big companies like Frog Togs, you know, they make rain gear. They've been making rain gear for motorcycles and outdoors for a long time. But now they're coming up with some stuff that's very compressible, that is high visibility material, and they're hoping that the kayak community will pick it up so that if it's out there raining, you're in a low visibility situation, you throw your rain gear on, it's bright, it's got some reflective strips on it that, you know, so they're beginning to identify the community as a potential market for them.
Cool. How about you, Greg? What's your perspective on the impact of kayak fishing to the ICAST or to the sport fishing industry?
I agree with Sean's assessment. I think there are a few manufacturers out there who have started, you know, looking and making kayak-specific rods. You know, aside from like what you would consider the high end of the custom rod manufacturers like Bull Bay or Hurricane, or those manufacturers, Ohiro Fishing has had their Carbonado series out for a couple of years now. I know they reviewed it on yakagler.com when they first came out. And they continue to recognize the value and are actually looking at adding another rod to the series. So that's kind of cool. But I agree that a lot of the other manufacturers haven't recognized that yet. I was actually surprised at, proportionally speaking, how much I saw that was directly related to kayaking. I was expecting a lot more sport fishing stuff. You know, obviously the bass fishing industry is gigantic, and everywhere you turned, there was a tournament shirt, and you know, there were so many of the, you know, if you followed the any of the bass fishing tours at all, you know, all the names that you talked to were there. As a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody in an alleyway, and Hank Parker walked over to me because he saw my shirt, and he said, what's a yak angler? So that was kind of cool to talk to Hank Parker about kayak fishing for a couple of minutes before he had to move on. But I was surprised that not only all the major guys were there, but as Sean said, how much of the gear guys were there as well. There were several manufacturers we talked to, either informally or during some of the interview stuff today, who said that it's their opinion as industry insiders and as manufacturers and distributors, they're seeing now how fast kayak fishing is actually growing, and they're concerned that they're behind the curve. They're concerned that they didn't recognize it 2 years ago to be ready to be where they should have been this year to really be able to take advantage of the rate, not only the rate of growth, but the rate of increase in growth in the industry. You know, with the price of gas and the economy and the cost of boats proper, if you will.
Right.
You know, one guy I was talking to today said, you know, everybody, as a matter of fact, it was one of the guys from Unfair Lure, said, I mean, now everybody who wants to fish but realizes that they can't afford a boat can now afford a boat, but they're paddling it instead of, you know, putting gas in it.
Right.
And it's exploding across the industry. So I think the industry is recognizing not only the growth, but they're recognizing that if they don't hurry up, they're going to be behind it. And I think that's a good thing for us because I think that will drive a lot of innovation, and I think it will drive a lot of competitiveness in terms of, you know, in terms of pricing for us as the industry moves forward. So it's a good thing.
Well, I think a couple of other aspects that's kind of playing into this as well from the kayaking side is that, you know, I had a chance to, you know, talk to somebody from a, you know, a large, you know, media website that predominantly caters to the bass fishing community, you know, that typical tournament, big bass fishing. They get millions of views. You know, the gentleman lives up in Minnesota, and he's like, man, I've got hundreds of lakes up here, you know, but only like 40-something percent of them can I access with my boat. The other ones, nobody gets out to because there's not a boat ramp. There's no place for me to launch a boat. He goes, I'd love to go fish them. But the only way you're going to get there is to take a canoe or a kayak or, you know, a smaller boat like that and get out there on it. So I think there's, you know, I definitely think there's, you know, interest coming and it will continue to grow.
Cool. Yeah, that's good news. It is really good news for the industry. It's good news for kayakers because I think more, I mean, you know, as far as economics is concerned, it's better when you have more people in the market and more people in production, you know, supply and demand type thing. Hey, Matt, if you got something you want to ask or ideas, man, chime in, dude. No problem.
Well, I kind of like how we're talking about, you know, like, lack of boat ramps and that kind of stuff, and Hobie unveils a 7-foot boat with two seats on it. Because I think you need a trailer for that thing.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and talk about the Hobie PA-17. I mean, that was unveiled, and that is what did it look like. It was huge, right? But I know that Sean,
and I did at the beginning of the hour.
Freaking ginormous, right?
Freaking ginormous, yep.
But now Sean was actually talking to Drew Mixon. And I know Drew, and he's a cool guy. But Sean, give us that perspective that Drew was giving you on that boat.
Yeah, you know, and I don't wanna tip too much because, you know, I got great interviews with all the kayak manufacturers, including Hobie, and I got one of the Hobie guys from, you know, the factory to talk about all the technical aspects. But, you know, Drew Mixon was there, and we were hanging out talking about it, and it was just kind of an interesting conversation. I'm like, Drew, I'm gonna capture this. So we went back and recorded the whole thing, and we'll play the whole conversation later. But, you know, I have a counter argument to it, but he did bring up that there are going to be some interesting niche markets for this, right? So, you know, the father son, father daughter that want to, you know, their sons are a little, daughters a little bit older. You know, they can still get up there and paddle. I'm like, all right, well, maybe a few, but it's still an expensive boat. But the other one that was kind of interesting is maybe some of the fishing guides, you know, the people who run guide and charter service on kayaks, you know, you can pop that front seat off and put a guy up front that, you know, the guy in the back can, you know, pull the boat in, paddle the boat in, whatever, not paddle, but pedal the thing in, you know. It does have a big mount in the front for a big trolling motor. You know, you could operate the thing, take it in, and have your guy fishing up front. You know, bring it in, put it on fish, and have the guy fishing, ready to go. Open it up, make it, you know, more accessible to, you know, the fly, you know, fly guys. But my argument to that is I don't know a lot of kayak guides who are going to want to spend over $5,000 on the kayak to run as their, you know, maybe a few, but we'll have to see.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll have to see. And that, and I think that's a good lead in. And like I said, we will play the audio from the interview. Got a little bit of work to do in the editing room on that. But yeah, it's interesting, you know. And like I said, I take everything from a perspective of, okay, you know, I mean, if you want to give that a shot, I mean, but now, and you said that Jackson was not present at ICAST. Jackson's not there?
Oh, that's correct. They were not there.
Matt, any insight on that? I know Matt's a pro staffer for Jackson, but...
The crew was there, but they were not exhibiting. They were just there
in
the
okay.
company.
Okay.
But they're actually going to unveil their Kraken at the outdoor retailer show next month.
Okay. All right. So outdoor retailer it is. And you know, I guess from the perspective of what can you afford, you know, can you afford to take all that stuff and move it out there and all that kind of stuff? Because I know from you get into ICAST and you start looking at what they're paying for booths, it's a little pricey.
It's
so
expensive.
Yeah,
it's
it
expensive.
Is. Yeah, so interesting stuff, interesting stuff. So what else do we got? What else do we got to look forward to?
Can I draw something in there, Chip?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
And I'll start with the disclaimer that I am a member of the Hobie, I've done it twice today, the Native Kayaks Pro Staff. But
there you go.
While one of the, it's probably the largest kayak manufacturer out there, introduced the largest pedal power, you know, human pedal propulsion kayak, the other guys out there with pedal power introduced the smallest one. While Hobie went up, Native went down and introduced the Slayer Propel 10. That's 10 feet long, a lot lighter than the Slayer Propel 13, a little bit wider for about the same capacity, but it for no other reason, it's just interesting to note that while one company went in one direction, another company went in exactly the opposite direction, and they both invested a ton of money and both firmly believe that the move they made was the right one. So it just shows you how much room there still is in this industry to move, even with something as big as what you would consider the highest end and the most expensive boat in the industry.
Right.
Yeah, and down a middle path between the two price points, right, so the new Slayer Propel 10, you know, a smaller boat, you know, going, like you said, the smaller direction, which is needed, Hobie going bigger, you know, and then Old Town comes out with the Predator XL, which is electric. So it's kind of
exactly.
A third tangent.
Yep.
You know, based on, you know, the Predator 13 platform, it's a little bit wider. Nice stable boat, and I got to spend a lot of time looking at all the kayaks, and they did a very nice job on the XL.
What'd you guys think of the Viking kayaks debut?
I think unfortunately where they were at, it wasn't getting a lot of exposure, and I think, you know, I think it's a great product by looking at it. But where it was at, I don't think it got a lot of exposure, and I think a lot of people looked at it and said it's another sit on top with a molded seat. When the industry's going to lawn chairs, here's another entry molded seat, you know, sit on top.
But I'll plus in there that we had the opportunity to talk to Bill Bragman at length, and I don't think the video isn't up yet, but it will be shortly on Yak Angler for the interview that we did, but one of the things he points out was that this kayak really brings some innovations from New Zealand and innovations in fishing and thinking about kayak fishing that the U.S. market really hasn't seen yet. And some of those have value and really are only viable on the platform that they're built in, so at least in the incarnation they're in. So I don't want to say too much more than that and you know, blow up the interview, but
right.
I agree their placement wasn't as great as it could have been, but I think you know, listen, there are still a lot of people out there selling sit-on-top kayaks with molded seats, and I think there will be, and I think there's going to be that price point question.
As we talked last week,
it's going to be an upgrade path, yes.
Yeah, well, to be objective here, I mean, there's two different questions. There was a question that Chip asked me, which was, what was the hype and the feeling around the debut of it there, and versus how do I think it's really going to do in the market? I absolutely agree. There's a lot of molded sea kayaks, you know, great price point, quality product that's going to be out there, and it's going to be major sellers. But from a hype standpoint, I think between placement and just, you know, impact, you know, it wasn't anything new and radical that was easy to look at and say, hey, this is different. This is unique. Look, this thing's 27.5 yards long. This one's got an electric motor. This is, you know, there wasn't anything that made it pop out and say, this one's different. And I think the other thing that maybe hurt it, in my opinion, and it's not really hurt it, but maybe kept it from getting more attention, was there was a couple of like Ram and a couple of others, even GoPro, that had kayaks in their booths, you know, showing off their product. It was kind of cool. GoPro had a huge kind of pavilion set up in there, kind of Pickle Jackson big rig, all decked out with a micro power pole and GoPros all over it, you know, sitting in there. But, you know, when you walk by a couple of booths and there's just a kayak showing off, and, of course, Yakir had all their product on top of it. So I think some people may have looked at it and said they're using it to show off and demonstrate the product.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. And that was Matt who brought that up too, about the Vikings. And I had talked to Bill about Vikings, and I understand some of the concept there that Greg was saying about there are some things about those boats that we haven't seen. Kind of like when they brought in the fishing boats from South Africa and stuff. There's some interesting things about them that we haven't seen yet here in the U.S. But unfortunately, you know, location, 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 and you're a good perspective on the thing if you're looking at boats that are set up for accessories, and then, you know, and Yakir is in the market with a lot of accessories, and they're just bringing the Viking kayaks on. So it'll be interesting to see, and I think that from a price point standpoint for people who are just starting to get into the market, and hopefully we'll talk about this later on in another show, but a good discussion point is, you know, what's the difference between that boat you see at the big box store and, you know, and what, you know, if you want to take it up a step and start doing fishing. Now, people fish out of every kind of boat there is. I mean, I've seen folks fishing out of whitewater kayaks and stuff like that, but if you're looking for a stable platform, it's a different story when you start to talk about hull. What about anything?
Can I go back to one quick thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Because you just brought up something that I need to get Sean's input on. Sean, you know, we talked about the big innovative kayak manufacturers were all over the place. But I've walked almost the whole show, and I don't remember seeing any of the manufacturers that are making most of the kayaks that you'll see in Dick's or the other big box retailers, those very entry level, very basic boats. I didn't see Pelican, I didn't see any of those other guys that I would think would be out there looking to sell to those types of retailers who are out there. I don't know if it's a different distribution chain and they'll be at OR, an outdoor retailer, but it just occurred to me when Chip said that I didn't see any of them there at all.
No, none of them. You know, obviously some of them are made by others, right? So,
right.
You know, I think a couple of the companies that were there have the private labeled versions that they make for some of the big boxes. And they didn't have those out, but no, you're right. None of the other ones were out there. And even that, some of the ones who were there had some of their newer, bigger kayaks there, even Native. Everything, I think, was either an Ultimate or a Slayer sitting there. You know, where was, you know, Native's other boats? Old Town, Ocean Kayak, they had a Trident there, but they didn't have any other smaller ones. They had a lot of big games and a lot of predators. You know, so the smaller standard kayak wasn't really present there.
So if you're thinking on the lines that ICAST is a place that, as a retailer, so I'm Chip Gibson. I own a little shop, a little outdoor shop in here in South Georgia, and I want to go to ICAST and see what I can find. I hear this kayak fishing stuff is interesting. So I go there, and all I see are these big, you know, four-digit number kayaks. So interesting.
Well, you know what? I need to give an exception to that, because the one company who was there that did have a good distribution of their product line was Wilderness. You know,
uh-huh.
They had
tarpon
rides, the new Thresher, Commander. So they had pretty good representation of their entire product line there.
Cool. Very cool. How about let's go into like accessories, and like I said, we will have some audio from Sean and up on next show. But what about without taking away too much thunder? How about accessories as far as like electronics? You know, did you see anything new and interesting coming out for electronics? And I know Greg, you're going to hold back and not steal any thunder from a Yak Angler interviewer. Thing like that, but just a hint of something interesting.
I'll throw this out without getting too far into details with it. The typical Raymarine, Lawrence, Hummingbird, we're all there. A lot of their product was the bigger ones that you're going to find on the bigger boats, and even some of the massive, GPS maps and stuff were there. They all had some of the smaller ones on display. Greg and I had a chance to talk about this a little bit at the show. We found interesting as kind of a follow-up from something I think was on last week's show or the week before, was some of these portable little sonar systems that you can either attach to your kayak or attach to a fishing line and throw out there. Greg, I'm going to ask you for help on the name of the third company, but a company with a product called iBobber was there. Fish Hunter, and then there was a third one. What was the name of that, Greg?
Deeper.
Okay.
Smart Fish Line.
Yeah, so Deeper and those. So those are the three big ones, and they were all there, and they all have kind of the same product with slightly different takes. And, I know between us we had a chance to get in and talk to a couple of them, and I know two of them I did interviews with, and we've got some good details, and I even got some pictures and stuff. So as we continue to edit, we'll have all that stuff ready to go next week.
Cool. Greg, your take, Ren? Anything interesting on the line?
Yeah, I think that the downsizing and going to a more minimalistic approach for bottom viewing and fish finding, if you will, was really interesting, especially for folks who are looking at that trend, who don't want to go through batteries and wires and switches and lions and tigers and bears to get viewing of the bottom into their boat, or even depth, if it's deeper than your paddle. So that's
right.
Interesting. And Marshawn's looking at those other two. I'm going to be looking at deeper, and then we're going to compare notes and try to come up with, between the two of us, a really good ABC chart of who's doing what and what the features and functions and those kinds of things are. So I think that'll work out really well.
Cool.
Yeah. And the price points seem to be between like $100 and $300, depending on the product and option, if you will. So it's, they're not expensive. They're not like some of these $500, $600 units. So.
Right. And I think the other electronic thing that I think that, we're obviously seeing a huge amount and a continual increase is in the GoPro arena, but the other camera manufacturers, not only cameras recording above water action, but I think I know I saw at least five different manufacturers of different types of underwater cameras, either ones on the end of the pole or ones you could attach to your line or ones that drag behind you or on a downrigger or... So there's a whole lot more application to underwater viewing than
the there was
the
even
path.
One like ROV manufacturer there that had that huge tank set up with the ROV down in it and broadcasting video from the inside, and they're moving it around and swimming it, and I just kept thinking to myself, I'm like, where would you put that on a kayak? That would be kind of cool to play with.
Well, the new Hobie PA-17, I'm sure, would be an excellent operating platform for it. But
you had a,
there you go.
Maybe you got get an old Mariner, you know, with that launch deck there behind it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, put a little helipad on it. So I think the video integration options continue to increase. There were a couple of manufacturers of, or one manufacturer at least, of what I would consider a more entry-level video system. One manufacturer that has, you know, a little bear, mama bear, papa bear kind of setup with integrating this technology with different features, different functions, and different price points. So I think those are kind of interesting, and I think as we see those come to the market or get more exposure in the market, I think it'll open up video a little bit more to, listen, everybody can buy a GoPro in Walmart now.
Right.
And I think that speaks volumes of what that technology is doing in our everyday lives and how it's working. But there's a lot more stuff that's applicable. And, of course, every mount manufacturer has more different ways to mount a camera than you can shake a stick at. So they're obviously recognizing media as well.
Yeah, they all had slightly different takes on cases and mounts and, you know, durability and, you know, video quality. But you're right, there's a lot of camera folks there.
And
I finally
now you
found
got
a mount that the camera doesn't shake all around all the time anymore. Oh, it took forever.
And none of the mounting systems are interchangeable, right? They all have different types of mounting devices. So if you decide that you want to go with something different, you got to change everything out on your boat, right?
I think one of the things that I saw was the universality of track mounting. I was talking with the one manufacturer that I had a conversation with about the sonar, and his mount was a rail mount, mounting to a circular rail like you'd find on a boat.
Right.
And we had a conversation about, you know, really how are you going to mount the track? And when he said what's a track, I knew I had a conversation point. And I offered to watch his booth, and I told him, walk around to every kayak manufacturer in this building, and for every kayak you find without a track or a track mount option, I'll give you $20. So I think the track concept, you know, while Scotty is Scotty and Railblazer is Railblazer and somebody, you know, Atwood is Atwood, and they look similar but they don't match up, I think the one thing everybody is looking at is the universality of the track mount. And that's kind of becoming the de facto standard of ways to stick things on your boat if you don't want to, you know, if you want to be able to move stuff around. And the manufacturers are certainly recognizing that because they're all building it into the boats now instead of, you know, while Yak Attack and Yak Gear and a couple other companies have add-on track mounts, you know, aftermarket stuff, everybody now is putting tracks on their boats.
Right. Interesting. One other thing as far as electronics go, I mean, anything new in the way of VHF radio? I mean, and I know that's not going to be very specific for kayak other than, you know, floats and waterproof and all that kind of stuff. But I know, Greg, you probably, if you saw something, it might have caught your eye. Sean, radio. I mean, that's something that I know that I always carry. But
yep, I know Lowrance has come out with an update to their floating integrated GPS and VHF unit. They're at the version 2, if you will.
Right.
Includes digital select calling for distress calls, automated position reporting for the Coast Guard. You know, if you flip the safety lever and push the red button, it tells the Coast Guard where you are, automatically switches to a distress channel for you to talk to the Coast Guard and sends your stuff out. They come up with the updated version of that. I didn't see any of the other, you know, Raymarine, they haven't really done anything in the handheld market, anything really significant in the past couple of years. And none of the other manufacturers I saw, I didn't get a real good look at the Garmin booth. That's on my list for tomorrow, which I don't know if you did, but I would be surprised if they were doing anything along that line.
No, Garmin was pretty much entirely just their marine electronics, you know, the depth finders and stuff, which it's interesting because for bigger boats and for sailing, I've used a lot of Garmin electronics over the years, and if you look at the big three kind of on our side, it's usually, you know, Lawrence Hummingbird and Raymarine, and you look at the features functionality of something from Garmin, it's usually pretty lacking, you know, comparison, same price point, and it just seems like Garmin hasn't really paid too much attention to the smaller electronics, and I think that's changing. So I think while there's not much from a radio perspective, I think you're going to see, at least from what I saw, more, you know, equivalent, small, compact functionality compared to, you know, a Hummingbird or, you know, Lawrence unit coming out from Garmin.
Right. What about, like, position reporting stuff? I know that you're a spot user. See anything like that? Or?
Yeah, I don't even think spot was there.
I didn't see them either.
Yeah, and I didn't see anything else, you know, ACR and those companies. I didn't see them out there at all. And maybe this isn't their, maybe more a traditional boating show is for them. But no, I didn't see any of them represented out there.
Huh. Interesting. Because I've got a couple of spots on order now, so just I'm going to put a couple of mounts in my motorcycle and boats to be interchanging them out. I think position reporting is kind of an interesting thing. After that one point we did on the show there with the spot thing you had, and I think it might be something. You know, you get so many people out there in kayaks, especially when we do like the adventure fishing tournaments and things like that. People get going offshore in kayaks. Might be interesting. It might be something there, you know, as far as knowing where the boat is and stuff in case you get in trouble. So,
well, you know, and I'm it would surprise me if Adventure Fishing World doesn't do this soon. So here in Florida, we have what they call the Everglades Challenge. It's a 300-mile kayak, nothing to do with kayak fishing, but it's a 300-mile kayak race that also opens up to small sailboats and some other things, different classes now. But it started off as just a paddling event, basically from the Tampa or Tarpon Springs area down to Key Largo. It's about 300 miles and takes, you know, some guys are finishing it in just shy of 4 days paddling this
right.
whole thing. A spot is required. You will not leave day one checkpoint, not even launch from the beach if you do not have, you know, a spot on your kayak.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and that's part of their thing is you can go to their website, they bring in all the feeds, and you can see where all of the competitors are at.
Right. So, but
if
you
just
see...
brought a can of paint with you and painted a spot on the side of your kayak.
Ah, ha, ha.
Ah, ha, ha.
Oh, very cool. What about, how about paddle manufacturers? I mean, that's probably going to be more outdoor retailer, though, I think.
Yeah, I think the only person who really had anything unique there in paddles was Wilderness, that I saw, at least to this point, that they had, I don't know if you talked to them, Sean, or I don't want to steal anything you're doing, but I know they had a couple of innovative paddle designs out with some of their stuff. But again, aside from that, I didn't see any of them there.
No, just you know, the folks from you know, Confluence, you know, Wildy, Adventure Tech Paddles. But, yeah, I actually did one of my interviews while I was over there was going through the new Air Pro Max seating on the ride. We went through
uh-huh.
the pressure, and then they talked about, the new paddles and the new specific kayak angler paddles that they've got. So, yeah, that'll be one of the interviews we have.
Cool. And you saw, like, how many different kinds of soft baits and hard baits and all of that kind of stuff? Did you get a good count?
One bazillion.
Is there, Greg, a color selector that works for all the colors that are out there? I mean, do we have – you're going to have a bigger dial, right?
Yeah, and I think there are so many color combinations. I mean, Chip, there were guys there, there were manufacturers set up with walls. You know, you had a wall that was 8 feet high by 12 feet long with hard baits in rows 6 inches apart. They're spaced a half an inch between them. And it was covered.
Wow.
And they were different colors and different color combinations and different sizes and everything else. But that would that's one of the things that I just kind of boggled at. Like I said, how many different hard baits are there and how many different ways can you twist it? With that said, some of our friends do continue to come out with some pretty innovative stuff. Had a good time talking with Paul Van Rienen from Unfair Lures, and he's got some very interesting stuff, not only in the pipeline, but that's hitting the market now, that some pretty radical design changes on stuff that we've used every day and never done.
Does he have something that you can throw at a cobia that's following a manatee coming out of a power plant outflow that they'll hit every time?
He doesn't, but there's another company that does. and I saw it today, and I said, oh, my goodness, that is...
That's a guaranteed to bite, right?
Does. It is. I would jump into the water to bite it. So.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, one of the funniest things that I saw is, some of the smaller booths are a little more aggressive, right? So when you walk by the big brand tackle company, huge display, huge booth, you really kind of have to even go in and hunt somebody down to really get information. Other ones, that are out there, some of the smaller ones, you can tell it's like they're very aggressive, and they're just like, hey, where do you fish? I'm like, all right, well, I live in South Florida. I do a lot of mixture between, fresh water and inshore fishing. Oh, have you seen our new baits? And she hands me, like, these samples of this blob-looking thing and a couple of paddle tails that are kind of soft and gooey. And if you've ever seen those, like, water balls they sell, like, you can put in, like, your plant vase that you put the balls in, they soak up water, and you stick the plants in there, and they just slowly... They're creating soft plastics baits like that, that they have a scent. You throw the plastics in the scent, and they absorb all of that. Okay, that's kind of a cool concept. But she hands me this blob, and she goes, well, here, take this as a sample. You can try it. And I look at it, and I had to look at it hard. I'm like, what is it? And she's like, well, it's salmon egg. It's one of our most popular ones. And I'm like, don't have a lot of salmon fishing in South Florida.
How do I put a hook in this?
But I've got it, and I gotta tell you, I'm gonna throw it and see what hits it.
Wouldn't you be surprised if?
Yeah. All right.
I always thought everything ate salmon eggs.
I dough balls, crickets, and salmon eggs. Now we've got
exactly.
There we go. All right.
Even corn on the cob.
Yeah. A little. Get you a can of corn, man. Put the little kernel on the little bitty hook and throw it out there. Awesome. Well, I hope you guys had fun. And Greg, you're still there, so we are live at ICAST right now. You'll have some more stuff, and Sean will be working on editing up some audio for us for next week. So if you're listening on the podcast, make sure that you tune in to next week's show if you can, live. If you've got questions about something that the guys might have seen, and you don't see it at yakangler.com in the way of print or a video, or you don't hear it here on Kayakfish Radio, just go to our Facebook page and post up a question. What do you want to know about ICAST? What can we help out? Maybe next year we've got questions ready to go, but very, very interesting stuff. Hope you guys had fun down there.
Yeah, definitely. And before I go, I just want to just give one shout-out. For anybody who was involved in either at the AFWC this year or last year, or who has watched any of the video that was done for the AFWC, you know the man's work, but you probably don't know his name. I had the pleasure of working for the last 2 days and rooming with Kramer Diddy, who was the videographer for the AFWC, did a lot of the editing work, and has been doing yeoman's work, lugging probably 130 pounds of camera equipment around the hall for the last 2 days to get more than just your standard, talking head shots on products and information and the information that's being presented, really to bring it to folks in a way that's not only attractive but informational. So he has really done a tremendous job and continues to do a tremendous job. My hotel room has been turned into a video editing suite for the last 2 days. There's monitors and jog shuttles everywhere, but he's really done a great job, so I just wanted to give a shout-out to him. And anybody who looks at a lot of the video that's showing up on yakangler.com, the vast, vast majority of that has run through his hands, both from the shot to the post-production work. So hats off to Kramer for a job well done.
Very cool. And I want to also bring up that I was contacted by Miss Amanda Lees, and her and her boyfriend, Tim Ritter, they're organizing a Spoil Island cleanup in Dunedin, Florida on the 19th. That's a Saturday, I think, and they're organizing it with online fishermen. So if you're interested in helping out with that, give them a call, onlinefisherman.com, in the forums there and fishing events. It's the Spoil Island cleanup in Dunedin, Florida. So I wasn't able to get a hold of either Amanda or Tim, and I just want to give them a shout-out and make sure that folks knew about the event. We get a little bit busy here, and we don't always are able to connect with people, but we like to put out events when we can. So, Matt, how about you, man? Any events coming up? Did you catch any fish last week? What's going on? We're going to go around the table here, and we'll call it a night.
Yeah, we had a really good how event last weekend. Caught a lot of fish. It was excellent. And we're just going through the numbers today. Last year at after our fifth event, we had taken out 69 veterans. This year at our fifth event, we have taken out 142. So that's a huge milestone.
Well done.
Nice.
142 total,
yeah,
or you had 142 at the event?
Yeah, right. That's 142 between five events this year.
Okay.
Cool.
I'm like, wow, man, my hat's
last
off.
Last year was
142.
Yeah.
Yeah, not 142 vets at one event, but that's five combined for this year. We're just, crushing the numbers from this year and last year. So
cool.
Significant progress this year.
Nice.
But great fishing day. All the vets caught fish, and it was an excellent day. Plans this weekend. I'm going to get out tomorrow. For some flounder right after work. I'm going out a couple guys, we're actually taking a couple veterans out with us tomorrow too, so
very
that
cool.
Should be cool. And then hopefully Sunday, we'll hope the weather sticks, because Saturday I got a family event. So
all right,
so that's what I got planned.
All right, Matt. Sean, how about you, man? How's the new How chapter doing down there in your area?
We're doing great. So we did our first official event this past weekend, this last Saturday down here. We had three vets that we brought out, which was perfect because we were hoping to not have more than three, because we just kind of wanted to do that whole crawl, walk, run thing. We had three, came out, had a great time. Other than 10 minutes of downpour, we had beautiful weather, a lot of fish caught, some small peacocks and, large over a 5-pound bass, and even got a nice nice hybrid out of it. Gene and Tony got a nice hybrid out of the lake there. So three vets, some more volunteers, and our staff. It was a great first event. So lots to do better, but our vets had a great time, and that's what was important to us.
Awesome. And that's, you can find out information on your local chapter or the chapters down in South Florida or up in New Jersey or in Texas or wherever. Just go to heroesonthewater.org and look under the chapters list. You can find the nearest chapter to you. Very good. How about a Mr. Becker?
Well, my erstwhile fishing partner is still out of town, so as soon as he's back in town, and we'll get his brand-new kayaks lined up. Probably going to give this one more weekend of rest to get my backpack in shape, until I get the medical imaging done to see what's going on with that and make sure I don't make it any worse before I can make it better. So I may actually take a ride. Sunday, though, I'm actually thinking about not kayak fishing, but taking a ride over to the Gulf Coast, with a spinning rod and some big lures, and take a walk along the beach. There are some ginormous, once again, that word, snook being caught still off the beaches over there. So even if I can't get out for the tarpon, I could still you know, sit on the beach and possibly play with a couple of big girls over there.
All right. Sounds like fun. Unfortunately, I'm not doing kayaking this weekend. We've got a shoot coming up. Clone and I shot last weekend. This is just the season right now. It's kind of nice because it's too hot really here in central Georgia to be out on the water. There's some places on the Chattahoochee that you can find some shade, but we shot silver medal in the parent-child event, so the clone totally carried me in the Georgia State game, so we'll be headed to Nebraska next year for the Nationals, so we qualified for that, so that was
great.
A lot of fun. Yeah, so he can outshoot me with a shotgun though, but put one of those little birds on a stick and I could probably hit it at 1,000 yards, no problem, as long as it's not moving. All right. Well, any last minutes? Any oh by the ways? Anybody? Sean? Greg?
I got the New Jersey Fluke Tournament coming up next Saturday, July 26th. If you want to register, go to NewJerseyKayakFishing.com or on Facebook. The link for the tickets are there. That's Facebook.com/NJFluke.
Okay. Anybody else?
No, I'm good.
All right, then. Well, until next time. Guys, if you're listening to the podcast, we're here Monday nights, Thursday nights, I know for sure. I'm not too sure what's going on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, but I'm looking into it, and we'll hopefully be providing you something new here before the end of the year. So thanks for joining
we'll
us.
I was going to say hopefully we'll have some of the audio interviews up and loaded so that you know Chuck might be able to use them for Monday night. So stay tuned.
Absolutely. So stay tuned. And we'll see you next time. This is Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm Chip Gibson. Take a kid fishing and tie lines off. Good night.